Do you remember that meeting? There was a lot of energy and excitement and just like longing for people to explore vocation together and callings together. And so we thought, oh, this would be a good thing to apply for.
That thing they were applying for was the Communities of Calling Initiative Grant, a 5-year-long program dedicated to exploring the meanings and works of vocation and calling in the church. It was led by the Collegeville Institute from Collegeville, Minnesota. And this is From the Communities of Calling, a podcast that is taking a look at those works and ideas that the 12 participating congregations came up with over those 5 years. In this episode, we're paying special attention to how communities as a whole, as opposed to individuals, discern and work out their call in God's kingdom. My name is Andrew Coleman, and I'm from St. Benedict's Table, one of the participants of this wonderful grant. Now let's get back to Liz Miller from Edgewood United Church in East Lansing, Michigan. We're starting here because, as you heard, for them, this was a congregational discussion and decision right from the very beginning. Here's Liz.
So to have leaders that are listening to what are people talking about, what are the issues that are really rising up again and again, and listening for ways that we might respond as a congregation, it's a little bit slower, but what emerges out is a very clear sense of call for a congregation.
Many of those conversations happened on Sunday over coffee and during other gatherings of the church. But like so many other communities of calling, they did some formal discernment work, where they called in some folks who were trained in helping churches ask good questions, then listen and sort through all of the answers with hopes of discerning some ways forward that God had in store for them. And as a church that is filled with folks working for justice in society, this was one of the big questions they had.
Of what is the most pressing justice issue of our time that we are called to do something about? And out of that, out of all the dozens of answers, they found 10 themes that sort of were recurrent among the different groups and came up again and again.
It turned out, however, that it wasn't exactly simple to get from those 10 themes to what they should actually be doing about them as a congregation. I mean, it's not like they hadn't asked these questions before or that they were totally new ideas. There seemed to be some sense of frustration.
Why haven't we solved the problem to care for our neighbors? Why do we keep circling the drain on this? It's really because our people are doing that in 100 different ways out in our in various capacities. And what we do well is hold them, nurture them, inspire them. We've heard that from people. So many people talk about coming to Edgewood and it's, a breath of fresh air where they can just be themselves.
So they were starting to figure it out. After a bunch of digging on who they were, why people were coming there, and what they were good at, they were starting to come up with some answers. And then, here's John Ritz talking about some of his conversations.
I know in talking to individuals that there is a sense that part of our calling could also be that we need to support our own community and sort of do our congregational self-care in a way that's maybe a little more intentional than we have done it in the past because we've been so focused on the outer community. And ultimately, I think the goal is to not see those things as opposed in any way. They serve each other. They reinforce each other. And to me, that can be seen as calling, that even though we might usually think of calling.
Edgewood is filled with people working for justice in society, in their lives, outside the church, in a myriad of different ways, which means they had to actually turn inwards, intentionally develop small groups and the like as some of their initiatives to make sure that all of those disciples who are working to make the world a better place were being fed and cared for, so that they could continue to do their good work. At Pax Christi in Eden Prairie, Minnesota, they had to look inwards as well. And Carol Bishop, the parish director, she could see this. But she'll tell you it wasn't up to her. Because even though they're a Catholic church, which usually means it has a bit of a top-down approach, That's just not how it works at PAX. Here's Carol.
I know when I first came to Pax Christi, probably the most important thing that I was told was nothing happens at Pax Christi unless it bubbles up through the councils. So even though I'm parish director, I've got no authority to come in and say, hey, let's do this. I remember going to Pax thinking, oh, we should develop small groups coming out of the pandemic. But it's not up to me to do that. But then we did this 12 Tiny Things amazing retreat, and this woman came up to me afterwards. Carol, we have to do small groups here. People are disconnected. We have to reconnect them. And that kind of then kept bubbling forward from the councils till eventually it happened.
And that reminds me of what Liz said, in that it's a bit of a slower way of doing things, but what emerges is a very clear sense of call for a congregation. And now we're going to turn to the other Roman Catholic Church in the communities of calling, the Church of St. Francis of Assisi in Raleigh, North Carolina. This is the church with 5,700 families, or about 15,000 people, and over 100 already active ministries. For the whole of the congregation to do something together, other than have the Eucharist, it's basically impossible. So the leadership had to respond in a totally different way. Here's Chris D'Amico reflecting on this unique situation.
We have so many programs going on all the time. They're completely unaware that this program does exist.
Which makes it a bit difficult for someone who wants to get involved to discern where they might best fit. This is Ellen Ferrone talking about how this conversation can go.
We get lots of couples that are retiring, and it's like, but we don't know where to start. So I don't know whether they don't know it when they come into the program that this is the good place to start, because, indirectly, we, the facilitators, feed them to the ministries.
The program that they're facilitating is called Called and Gifted. It was developed by the Catherine of Siena Institute. It's a program that helps people figure out what their calling is, or as they refer to it in the program, their charisms. More on charisms in a future episode. This program works in three different steps. The first step is that you take a survey. There's 100 questions, and at the end, it considers your answers. And it scores you from 0 to 15 on 23 different potential gifts. Once you've figured out what you're good at and what you're not good at, what might you like to do, you move on to part 2, and you have an interview with one of the facilitators, like Ellen. Because just because you've scored highly on something because you're good at it, doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to be happy or fulfilled doing that in ministry. So you talk with one of the facilitators for a good hour, and you figure that kind of stuff out. Here's a little bit of what it sounded like when Ellen took what she had learned about me over that week and ran it through that interview filter, if you will.
So, you know, you could walk up to something like this interview, and you might be tired, but you get into this, and you could possibly have, I'm not quite sure, the charism. It could be engagement, because you're sitting here one-on-one, one-on-two with people. So you personally are energized, and you have this sense of joy in actually doing God's work.
And then comes step 3.
And the third part of the program is you have to go experiment. Well, how do I go experiment? So what I say is, you know what? This sounds like this kind of your ministry work might be internal to the parish, but outreaching in the parish. So why don't you go talk to our director of engagement, okay, Chris, and then maybe he can help you craft an experiment. So
to recap, one of the initiatives that St. Francis took on as a part of their Communities of Calling program was to create a program that helped people discern their calling so they could get involved in other ministry initiatives that were already active in the parish. I'll be honest, it took me a little while to wrap my head around this because it was just so different from the rest of the communities. But for them, with the charisms they had, being in the place that they are, seeing the needs that were around them, it makes perfect sense. So now we're going to turn our attention from the work that happens within the church and look towards work that faces more outward. The first one comes from First Congregational United Church in Boulder, Colorado, where Chris Broadway Bauman is the head pastor. After doing some discernment work on where the congregation felt that they were being called, they realized that they did not have all the capacities necessary for a couple of their ideas. But that didn't mean that they weren't going to follow through on them. They just had to find another way forward. One of the pieces of discernment was that they felt called to work with folks with mental illness somehow. So they found a mission partner.
Partner to work on that. And actually, they're in our building now. It's an organization called Mindful Works. And it's a job training program for folks who are coping with and recovering from mental illness.
It's a fabric arts and baking business. They make ottoman poofs and yoga cushions. And the church actually bought 120 fabric napkins from them to use during their brunch church program that runs during the summer. And in the kitchen, they make all sorts of different things, from scones and gluten-free cookies to dog biscuits.
And during COVID, we just said, yes, just expand, because they got to be declared essential, an essential workplace, because they were making masks and also because of their clientele, you know, that it was really important for people who were struggling with mental illness, coping with mental illness, to be able to come together. So we just said, yes, take over the fellowship hall. The church isn't using it, so yeah. You use it. They also use our choir room.
Everything they have is on wheels. So at the end of the week, when they're done making their cookies and their poofs and their napkins, they just kind of stack everything up and roll it away into storage. And the church has access to all its facilities. And while they do offer them modest rent, it's not simply, here's your space, you do your thing, and we'll do our thing. They're trying to make it more integrated.
We try to find ways to offer to be engaged with them, to build relationships with them. My son actually has been doing lots of video projects to help them get word out about their products and about their mission.
Churches have been renting their space to others for a long time. And maybe First Congregational gives us a look at how we might integrate that part of our church life into our calling in a more integrated way. And now we're going to turn to see West Morris Free Methodist Church in West Indianapolis, Indiana. They have also used their space as a great gift to the community. We'll hear about that. And also about how they're critical conversation partners in their neighborhood planning meetings. But first, they have a relationship with a nearby school. Here's a beautiful story about how they're called to the neighborhood and their neighborhood's call back to them, work together.
When we were broken into several times, they helped give us some, they raised money for us at that school and gave us to help upgrade our security system. And one of the classes actually drew pictures to send us, to kind of cheer us up, that still, I think, hang in the sanctuary. And
it's not just the school that they have close relationships with, but also the Community Resource Center. The Community Resource Center ran out of space. And well, here's the Reverend Dr. Kristen Marble, the head pastor there, telling us about that.
And these are, you know, the Neighborhood Resource Center is two blocks from us. We have opened space to them. They actually are physically out of space. And so they ran their high school education equivalency classes at our building. They ran a construction trades class at our building. They had summer day camp at our building. And they operate on, I have no idea how many, their budget is in the tens of millions of dollars.
And this resource center knows how much West Morris loves the community. They're integrated. They know the life. They've been broken into. They've supported others who have been broken into. Some of the stories I heard were just outlandish. But they know how much they care. And as a result, they are a key voice in neighborhood community planning processes.
I think because we're seen as a critical conversation partner and collaborative partner, that if we're not there, they're missing an important piece in the neighborhood. That there would be something missing if something were planned in the neighborhood and West Morris was not somehow at the table.
A classic event that many churches have during the Christmas season is a Christmas bazaar or bake sale or something like that. Well, West Morris has a version of it, but it's a big neighborhood version, and they're the ones that host it. So here's Rachel Molman telling us a little bit about what that's like.
Winterfest, for example, as just a giant community-led event that we hold at the church, and it's indoors, and we, you know, all the chairs are removed out of the sanctuary, so we have all the space for kids and families to run around, and it's a Christmas, it's a winter, it's, you know, we have Santa Claus, we have all these characters within the church, but it's a, you know, it's known as an event that really does love the community and kind of show them love and care and resources for families, and so we need to be a part of it, and they know that.
And that's, you know, that's an event that's sponsored by the local public schools, the charter school, the neighborhood resource center, the library, the local health center, police and fire, the development corporation, and the anchor institutions were very like Lillian and Gredeon and Rolls-Royce are there. We're a very industrial neighborhood surrounded by a lot of manufacturing plants, and they're there, and West Morris.
So they're just dug in. They got to know everybody and made it known that their space was there to be used, but they wanted to be a part of the events that were held there. And now we're going to hear from the Reverend Kelly Kirby and the Reverend Benjamin Hart at St. Matthew's Episcopal Church in Louisville, Kentucky. A question came up for them that came from tragedy. It sparked a conversation that would shape every ministry and every initiative coming out of this congregation. So this next idea is not really a particular initiative, but more of a question that they ask and the reason that they ask it and how it shapes everything they do.
So in 2015, after the Mother Emanuel shooting, a group of black and white pastors across the city came together to talk about, well, why don't we know each other and what can be done about racial violence?
The Mother Emanuel shooting she's referring to is the Charleston Church Massacre that took place at the Emanuel African Methodist Church in Charleston, South Carolina, on Wednesday, June 17th, 2015. Around 9 in the evening, during a Bible study, Dylan Roof, a white supremacist, killed 9 people, including senior pastor and South Carolina Senator Clementa Pinckney.
And that led to a whole group, a clergy group that met weekly to talk about racial issues in Louisville, and specifically economic disparity in Louisville. And that thinking spread into the congregation pretty quickly. These are largely East Louisville congregation members, so largely white, all privileged. And so we've imagined ourselves as a congregation that has a voice for the whole city, or in the whole city.
So I asked, how does that actually play itself out? What does that actually mean?
It means that when we do something, we're interested in what good are we going to be doing in the city. It's kind of always, are we doing this just for ourselves, or is this doing some good? Is a question that if we start anything, is always there and gets asked. We imagined this community of calling and the resources that we were going to be able to do some sort of social enterprise. How can we direct this to the other place that we have a heart for in our city, particularly the western half and the western end? And that sort of led to the well, we're going to raise money for organizations that do empowering work in that area.
We'll hear more about those empowerment projects in a future episode. But for now, we're going to move to Holy Trinity Lutheran Church in Minneapolis, Minnesota, because they were called to move through tragedy as well. This is the church that is at the heart of the neighborhood that experienced the uprising after George Floyd was murdered, where so many of the initiatives that we've been hearing about have been bringing people into the church or going out into the community. This one actually happens in the congregation members' homes.
This project is housed on a site that used to be MIGAZI, which was a youth empowerment, Indigenous Youth Empowerment Agency, that we as a church are land banking currently, so until a BIPOC owner can take over.
While Ingrid was giving this presentation at Collegeville, there was a moment of joy that came. Jane Patterson, one of the directors at the Collegeville Institute, had remembered that they had only thought that they'd be doing this next piece for about a year, but they were now going on three.
And I was just thinking this last week, we're still tending a flame for MIGAZI that showed up during the uprising. They captured the fire that burned their building down, and that fire has been living in our members' homes now for 3 years. We've learned a lot from Roman Catholics, actually, about how to keep flames going, what are the best candles, how do you transport it from one home to another. There were a couple of, it always burns in two places at a time. It'll be used ceremonially in a ceremony that will launch their new facility this fall. They're consulting with elders as to how we put out the flame that has been traveling.
Tending a flame that comes from tragedy so that it might be extinguished in a ceremony that claims victory over death. If that's not calling, I don't know what is. And now for something completely different. Calling and vocation take on so many different shapes and sizes. And in this one, it turned into an event where St. Benedict's Table brought together a bunch of thinkers in a symposium called
Babel 2.0, Can the Church Survive Online?
Here's Jamie Howison from St. Benedict's Table in Winnipeg, talking about why St. Ben's thought that hosting a symposium about online church was an important thing to do.
We quickly discovered that what really resonated at St. Ben's was our community has a call, our community has a vocation. And part of our vocation is in the world of art and of ideas. And as we began to contemplate that big conference day, it was, well, if this is one of the things that we've been exploring for a number of years through podcasting and other things, is there something that we can bring to the wider church that asks questions that we've been toying with in different ways for years and years and years?
Many of those presentations are on the St. Benedict's Table website and our podcast, so you can feel free to go take a look at those. There was a lot learned on that day, and we hope there are at least a few lessons for the wider church. And here's Sarah Hodges-Kaliznik from St. Ben's, talking about the lessons that she learned from that day.
For me, the conversations in between the speakers were really important, and I think I really got to understand, but also the wider community, I feel like, at St. Ben's really understood how important and unique our online community is, that we have lots of people who tune in regularly, who use our resources online, who rely on that community, that online community, as their key way that they express and explore their faith. And that it isn't the same necessarily as getting together in person, but it is an important community that we need to continue to foster. And through that realization, the next time we went to Collegeville, that's when some of these ideas of what can it mean and how can we continue to support that community and feed it, and the digital content coordinator position was kind of born through those discussions. So
one of the key things communicated through the Communities of Calling initiative is that callings can change. They are not static. They morph and they adapt to what is going on around them. Some of the lessons learned at the Babel 2.0 conference showed St. Ben's that their online ministry was something to which they needed to commit. St. Ben's has been in the podcast world since 2006, the bulk of that being sermons and recorded events. But it was felt that the gifts and callings of the rest of the congregation ought to be shared on this platform as well. That meant a small team and a little more structure was needed to write, capture, edit, and post those stories. So the Digital Commons coach and consultant position was created to help shape that already present calling into something new. And from that comes this podcast. Well, there you have it. From candles burning in parishioners' homes, tending a flame from a global uprising, to a church offering its space for a giant neighborhood Christmas bazaar, or a textiles and baking business to help those with mental illness, or a symposium on online church to small groups intended for congregational self-care, and so much more. All of these things are ways the congregation as a whole can respond to God's call. I hope this helps you think about call and vocation in a different way than maybe you have before. Next episode, we're going to be looking at a few ways that art was used through the 5 years of the Communities of Calling program. We'll hear about repurposing an old wooden church floor, to weaving in two places, to a brilliant introduction to scripture and art through Sunday school coloring sheets. Until next time, God bless. This podcast was made possible by the Communities of Calling Initiative grant, and a special thank you to Steve Bell for the use of his music. Today we heard the song, Turn It Around.
This has been a podcast from St. Benedict's Table. For information on our church and to access the full catalog of our podcasts going all the way back to 2006, visit us online at stbenedictstable.ca. In addition, if you are interested in supporting our online work, you can find information on the website using the donate button located on the top right-hand corner. Thanks for listening.